Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Happy New Year. Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes. I am Paul Leffler, coming to you once again from Radio City this afternoon, as we do each and every Sunday from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Each week we visit with Valley veterans of World War II, the men and women who have kept our country free through their brave service to our country. And we have a World War II veteran in studio today. Victor Smith of Fresno is here. Another guest is Brandon Wright, who is... become friends with so many veterans over the last few years with his work with the Stories of Service Project and now the California Voices Project as part of the Center for Multicultural Cooperation. Brandon will tell us how you can get involved in preserving the stories of the veterans in your life, whether they served in World War II or maybe even have served in our most recent conflict. And if you watched the debates at all last night, I'm sure you heard all the talk about the war, Republican or Democrat. They have their different takes on it, but I think we can all agree that we need to think about our men and women in uniform and pray for them as they put themselves in harm's way for our freedom. So now let's turn to our guest for this afternoon, and first we'll talk to you, Vic. I know that it's been a long time since December 7th, 1941, when the United States entered World War II, and I understand you still remember that day like it was last week.
Yeah, we were on our way home from church, and we heard the broadcast that Pearl Harbor had been bombed. Quite a shock. But we proceeded. Of course, we thought that we were going to recuperate real fast, but the damage that had been done just wiped everything out.
And how old were you at the time?
At the time, I was about 14, 15.
Too young to do anything
Too
about it just yet.
Too young to do anything at that time. The time went on, and when I was in high school, we were getting ready to graduate. And one of the deans of boys mentioned that he had gotten a program going where if we were on track for our graduation, they would let us go before draft. Well, we decided, five of us decided we'd go down and join the Navy, and it held out. The next morning after graduation, 9 o'clock in the morning, we were on our way to Farragut, Idaho for boot camp.
And it's fun. I've talked to a lot of Navy guys who've ended up in Farragut, Idaho.
Yep.
And they all say, why in the world? We're supposed to be out there on the seas with the sun shining down on us, and they send us to the coldest place in the country just about.
Yeah, the only thing we saw is once in a while they got us on a whale boat out on the lake, Monterey. It was quite an experience. The fellows that it turned out, we won an award with our marksmanship and so forth. We won the battleship award that they gave out, and they told us at the time that we probably had set some records that would never be broken. We had a group of fellows that came from the Montana area that were marksmen. They had been hunting a good portion of their life, so those fellows really carried us on.
You had nothing to do with it then?
No, I qualified as a marksman, but that's about all.
Well, I want to get to the intense experiences that you had towards the end of the war, and in fact, in the last major land battle of the Pacific Theater. But first I want to ask you, as we have Brandon here today, and he's going to talk a little bit about what he's involved in and what the young people are involved in trying to preserve history. What got you started? What made you decide? Because not only have you participated in the Stories of Service Project with recording a narrative that's now on DVD, has gone to the Library of Congress, and is very well done. You're also featured in the book that so many of us have talked about, Stories of Service, Valley Veterans Remember World War II, that Janice Stevens put together. What made you decide, you know what, my story is important, I want to preserve it, I want my kids and future generations to know about it?
Well, I think that it was real important that we all remember, because we were fighting for our freedoms, freedom for our spiritual life, freedom for whatever we wanted to pursue in life. And the most of us all turned out pretty well.
Brandon, let me turn to you quickly, and I do, a little later in the show, I want to get into specifics about the people that are listening, how they can get involved, what they can do if they want to, they have a veteran they want to tell their story, or they just want to get involved in hearing some of these stories and preserving them for posterity. Does this sound typical, what you're hearing from Vic? Is this what you get from most of the veterans you come in contact with?
Yeah, very much so, and that's the reason that we do the project. We feel that the latest generation needs to connect with the greatest generation and hear some of their stories and also hear what they were fighting for so that they can take that into their own lives as they grow up and become leaders in our community.
I know you've got a lot of things that you're shooting for in this new year. I want to touch on those with you a little bit later. And for now, until we get to this next commercial break, let's talk a little bit more about your experiences, Vic. So here you are, a teenager, a young teenager, when Pearl Harbor happens. Yep. At the time, you feel like you might want to do something about it. Eventually, you join the Navy. They send you to Farragut, Idaho, and then eventually they would send you to the Pacific, which was a whole lot different than Farragut, Idaho. What, for you, was that welcome to the war moment?
Well, we arrived at Pearl Harbor, actually at Ford Island in Pearl Harbor, where all of the fleets were bombed. And on Thanksgiving Day of 1944, I was appointed, or drafted, I should say, into a unit that was to be a staff command unit. At the time, we didn't know just what it was going to be, but it was a small unit. We had 17 enlisted men. We had 27 officers, both Marine and Navy. It turned out that the responsibility of the unit was to keep track of all of the personnel, Marine and Navy, in the Ryukyus Island area, which, of course, Okinawa was part of, and reported on a monthly and quarterly basis.
Mm-hmm. What kind of ship were you on?
Well, I was assigned to the Saratoga, but I got sick, I went into the hospital at Aia Naval Hospital in Hawaii, and had to spend a month. I had pneumonia primary, atypical, and it was curable by good food and sunshine and rest.
So you're in Farragut, Idaho, and you're fine. Then you get to the warm climate of Honolulu, and you get pneumonia? That's not supposed
pneumonia
to happen.
Yeah. But a doctor came in, and he showed me a picture, and he said, do you recognize this? And I said, it looks to me like what's left of the Saratoga. Where my battle station would have been was hanging by just cables off the side. It had been blown completely off the ship. And he says, you're a mighty lucky young man. They flew my orders, by the way, off the Saratoga back to Fort Island so that I could proceed once I got out. And that's when I got into the unit that went into, finally into Okinawa, Commander Naval Air Bases 3256.
The Saratoga was a huge carrier, and obviously you talked about the aftermath of what happened to it. What did that mean to you at the time when he showed you that picture? Was that an emotional moment for you? Did you think about the guys that you had been serving with?
Well, it sure was. Of course, I didn't know any of the fellows because the day that I was to go on board, I got the pneumonia, and I went to sick bay, and they sent me to the hospital. But when it pulled out, I recognized it because it laid there for quite a little while they were painting it up. And said that they ran Liberty cruises, and I was pretty happy about it until I found out where they were going. They went out to the invasion at Iwo.
Right. And you ended up at the invasion after that, and one that a lot of people today don't think so much about Okinawa because Iwo Jima was so intense, because it's gotten so much notoriety. A lot of people don't realize how intense Okinawa was, how brutal it was, and really how crucial it was to the eventual victory. And had the atomic bombs not been dropped, Okinawa would have been that last stepping stone to invading mainland Japan.
That's right. You mentioned the atomic bombs. Just before they dropped those bombs, they called us together and told us that we should carry our gas masks and our weapons with us because they didn't know what the retaliation would be. The fact that Okinawa laid so close to the Japanese homeland made it necessary that we were prepared for anything. That's when they dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
And we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. We'll also talk about what Vic Smith experienced on Okinawa, the close call that he survived, and the person who was very close to him who did not survive that close call, and how he inspires him still today. More to come with Navy veteran Vic Smith and Brandon Wright from the California Voices Project here on Hometown Heroes today, News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is World War II Navy veteran Victor Smith, and we're just about to get to his landing in Okinawa on April 1st, 1945. A little later in the program, we'll find out from Brandon Wright how you can get involved locally in preserving the stories of the veterans in your lives, and maybe you can get involved with the meeting some other veterans who want to tell their stories and have their history, their unique perspective, their eyewitness accounts of World War II or any other conflict that they were a part of preserved for posterity. It's a very important duty, and it's a very urgent one with the rate at which World War II veterans are leaving us. The time is short, and I hope that you'll join me in that crusade in 2008. So maybe that you can make that your New Year's resolution. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. For now, we continue with Victor Smith from Fresno, remembers Pearl Harbor and when that happened, later got to see 3 years after the attacks what was left of the Arizona at the time, and also found out that the ship he was supposed to be on, the USS Saratoga, an aircraft carrier, had he been on it, he would have been blown to bits. So he was relieved at that, but probably not too relieved when you had to set foot on Okinawa on April Fool's Day in 1945.
Well, I'll take you to the night before, which we had a suicide plane attack on us, and the plane missed the bridge on the ship we were on and hit the ship right behind us. The bomb slid off and blew up and killed 17 fellas in the mess hall that were waiting to be stretcher bearers. We hit the beach at 8 o'clock, April Fool's Day, the 1st of April, and Easter Sunday, and we didn't run into a lot of resistance at all. There wasn't any resistance until somebody ran across a machine gun nest in the middle of the island about midday. But we spent the first night. It was rainy, like the weather we're having now. We spent it in a coral pit, and then my first sight of Okinawans was a little Okinawan lady that had her baby on her back and belongings on the top of her head, and she was running across the airfield. We finally went to where we were getting the planes all located. We had the aircraft avgas and so forth put in effect. But the thing that I really want to get across to you is that I met my best buddy, and on the 27th of April, 1945, we were under an awful heavy attack. He turned to me and he said, Vic, he says, we don't get these fellas out of their sacks, we're going to lose some people.
And this goes back to what happened at Pearl Harbor, because, and your friend's name was Joe?
Joe Pazda.
And how long had you guys known each other?
We met at Pearl Harbor.
You met at Pearl Harbor.
Yep.
So you met in late 1944.
Right.
And you remained friends, and you're assigned together. And you knew what happened at Pearl Harbor, that so many men died, like on the Arizona, because they couldn't even get out of their bunks. They didn't know the attack was coming.
That's exactly right. He was real concerned. So he told me to stand outside of the protection that we had built for such an occasion and watch for anything that might be in the lights, because it was midnight.
So this was some kind of dugout shelter?
Yeah, where we built. We put bunks in it. We used to go down into it, and we would read our Bibles to each other and then have prayer and try to go to sleep. And I learned a real big lesson there. I was about as Protestant as you could get, and Joe was a very strong Catholic boy, but I found that he prayed to the same God I did. Meant an awful lot to me, and I know that Joe is reaping his reward right now. But the when he got back, he asked me, "Have you seen anything?" And about that time, a plane was caught in the searchlights, and an AK-AK battery cut loose, blew him out of the sky. And then we heard another plane making a run, and he hollered at me to hit for cover. I don't remember my feet ever touching ground. Blew me through the opening. I hit something with my head, and somebody inside hollered that Smitty lost my hand or lost his hand. And I reached around, and it was still attached. I hollered, "Joe is still out there." I took maybe one or two steps, and I heard him cough, and I looked down, and I had almost stepped on his head. Nothing left. He was just a mess of tattered flesh, bones, dungarees, blood. Joe was gone.
I can tell it's, and I'm sure our listeners can tell, it's still a powerful emotional memory for you, and you can see it as vividly as you did on April 27th of 1945. And in effect, and you made clear at the beginning of this, the reason he was where he was because he wanted to make sure everyone else knew what was coming.
That's right. When the bomb hit, there were some of the fellas that he had just awakened, and they hit. These 14 by 14 tents had a pretty good-sized center tent pole. One of the fellas dropped his helmet, and he reached over to pick it up, and the shrapnel went across his back, cut the tent pole off, and blew a hole in his pant leg where it had been bloused out from the way he was standing. His bunk, nothing left of it from about the middle of the bunk up through the head. So there is just one definite one, but several others, they had their bunks blown up too. But it's something that I don't think I'll ever get over. I had somebody ask me the other day about PTSD, and I told them that as when you go through something like this, it stays with you. You never forget it. You wake up in the middle of the night thinking about it. It's one of those things. And we just hope the young people today will be saved from some of this horrific stuff. Even what's going on right now, it's such a shame, but this thing was caused by the terrorists, not by the American people.
Well, and there are so many today who are going through the same kind of things that you went through and trying to clear those things from their brains and being able to function. What was it that got you through that? Obviously, it still affects you today, and those memories aren't gone, and your memory of Joe isn't gone. How have you been able to cope with what you went through?
Well, I think that the Lord helped me a lot. I stuck pretty close with my church that was active in youth work at the church. And I really believe that the good Lord is the one that has brought me through all of this.
How often do you think of Joe?
Very often. Very often. He'll never leave my mind.
And I think it's important to note, and that's one thing that when if you ever stop and think about it, I often look at someone like you and my grandfather, for instance, who was in World War II. Well, if he hadn't survived, I wouldn't be here talking to you. But there are so many stories like that of the guys who did come back and how our world would be different without the impact that you've made since then. Do you ever think what kind of life Joe would have had or what kind of impact he would have had he survived?
I've never thought that, other than that, what I have thought about was what impact the loss of his life was to his folks. They were a very, very close-knit family. He had a brother that was active in the European theater, and he prayed every night for that brother, that he would make it through. I never had contact with his folks, though, ever, I never had the privilege of being able to get to them. They lived in the Far East Coast.
It's So you don't know if the brother made it through?
I don't have any idea.
Maybe we can find that out for you.
Be very nice. Very nice.
We'll look into that. Did you ever feel guilty because you survived and he didn't? I've heard that from a lot of people, that they feel the survivor's guilt in a situation like that.
The thought goes through your mind that why me, why not he? And nay, I'm thankful that the Lord brought me through, but I'm sorry, and I will be till my dying day. When I go for my reward, I hope to see him.
Amen. You're sitting here with a hat on, the USS Abraham Lincoln on it. It's got an American flag on one side, and on the other side there's another pin there. It's the Purple Heart.
Purple Heart.
You mentioned there that someone, one of your buddies, thought your hand was blown off when those bombs hit.
Yeah.
What did happen to your hand, and how bad was it?
Well, it had shrapnel, and they were going to fly me to Guam and amputate a portion of it. But the doctor that the Commodore had was an orthopedic surgeon in private life, and he told me, he picked me up when I was all packed to go. He said, Dave, so we're going over to the hospital. He says, I want to see what's going on. When he came out, he said, you're not going to have to go to Guam. He said, I'm going to take care of you. And he did. And he saved my hand.
And how were you so fortunate to come into contact with him?
Because
if he wasn't there, you would have lost your hand.
Yeah. Well, he was the Commodore's doctor. He was our commanding officer's doctor. So... But he took me over to the hospital, and you could tell that they were getting pretty heated about it because it was the 1st Marine Division Hospital. By the way, I don't think I mentioned, but we buried Joe the 28th of February.
The day after all this happened.
In the 1st Marine Division Cemetery. Pardon me.
No. That's okay. We know that those emotions are still powerful. That the cemetery is right there on the island of Okinawa.
Yep. So, he was one great man. 19 years old and to lose a life.
And obviously by the time you left that island, that cemetery was full of quite a few of them.
Yes, it was.
More than 12,000 Americans were killed.
They hauled the bodies in huge trucks stacked up, and they dug the graves with bulldozers.
Now, that battle didn't end till almost the end of June. What were you doing the rest of that time? Did your hand keep you out of things? Did they send you off somewhere else?
No, it took about 3-4 months for them to get my hand back in shape where I could do anything with it. But I was an electronics technician. So the seaplane tenders and so forth that we had out in the bay that were under our command, once in a while the fellas would call me and ask me to come out, spend some time with them. We'd go out and we had some entertainment. They had fishing poles on board, and so I was able to get a little activity of fishing. But it's quite an experience.
Well, that is certainly clear, and thank you so much for not only serving our country, but for sharing what you've shared today. I think Brandon wanted to share an observation maybe about something you were saying there.
Just listening to Vic's story reminds me a lot of the veterans that we've talked to. It reminds me of when the program first got started, we had a group of young people and a group of veterans in a room, and we were talking about how these are heroes that are in our midst. We need to capture their stories. And one veteran got up real defiantly, and he said, a little bit angrily, he said, we're not the heroes. The heroes are our buddies who didn't come back home.
Yeah.
And then one of the young people stood up and said, well, if you don't tell their stories, who will?
Mm.
Who will tell those stories?
Yeah.
So glad that Vic is here to tell Joe's story.
That's right. And I know you've had a few other veterans who have done the same thing, not only told about their experiences, but of guys like Joe who made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. We need to catch another commercial break here. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with Vic and his experiences during the war, and then hear more from Brandon about how you might want to get involved in preserving some of these stories of the guys who, I'm not ashamed to say, are our heroes. And I won't shy away from that because they're certainly my heroes. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Well, it's been a wonderful first half of the program today, hearing from Victor Smith about what he endured during World War II, about the loss of his good buddy Joe Opazda, and you really get a sense for that brotherhood that builds between men who are in battle, at war together. A man that may have saved his life and the lives of others that were with them back on Okinawa in April of 1945. And a couple weeks before that, Vic, was there are all these moments during the war that I think everybody remembers where they were at that time. And one of those moments in April of 1945 was the death of the president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who for you was probably the only president you remembered because he had been president for so long.
Yeah, for years. Now, they actually didn't make a big announcement because they were afraid of what it would do to the morale of the troops. So it was kept kind of quiet for about a couple of days, and then it leaked out, and everybody was so sorry that we lost what I feel was one of our greatest presidents of all time.
And were you at all nervous about the guy who was taken over?
No, I didn't know him.
Nobody did. Harry Truman, and it's really crazy when you look back at this, because you could make the argument that the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was the most important moment of the 20th century, and the guy who made the decision didn't even know those bombs existed until Roosevelt died and he took over. FDR never told him about it. So here he is, 3 months on the job as vice president, becomes president, and then 4 months after that, he's making the decision that changes the rest of human history.
Yeah, the history. Because we certainly had, the next move would have been the invasion of the Japanese islands, and that would have been just a horrific loss of personnel. So it saved an awful lot of our troops.
Maybe you.
Maybe me. Yeah. Possibility that we may have been involved. All I can say is that he was, Roosevelt was really thought of, and he's the president I don't think any of us that knew about at that time will ever forget.
Well put. I want to come back to another story with you in just a few minutes about long after the war and a little small world moment here in the Valley, and there are a lot of those that happen. But let's turn to Brandon now, and while we have some time, get into what you've been doing. And Brandon, for those who aren't familiar with the Stories of Service Project, which is now kind of morphed into the broader California Voices Project to attack different kinds of oral histories, give us a nutshell version of what it is that you do.
Well, basically work with youth and adult volunteers who come forward and use computers, video cameras, and other technology to preserve the stories of elders in our community like Vic, who've done significant things. So these could be people who've made cultural contributions to the community, or major contributions to our country, as Vic has in service to our country. And one of our big projects, our project that we've been doing for the last 5 years, is working with our veterans, especially World War II veterans. And we're currently actually recruiting World War II veterans right now. We'd like to do over a dozen oral histories over the next several months out of the Clovis Memorial District. And over the last 5 years, we've been able to work with over 250 veterans so far. And
just here in the Central Valley.
Yeah, that's just here in the Central Valley. But as time goes on, we're finding that it's harder and harder to find these veterans. So if your listeners happen to have relatives, friends, or neighbors who they'd like to recruit or recommend, we ask that they give us a call and give us that information.
We'll give them the number then so they can give you a call.
It's 445-0015.
And that's in the 559 area code. And that'll get you involved with the project that's already up and running. What if there's somebody who says, you know what, I'm a little too far away from Fresno, because you know the signal for KMJ. I mean, we're going from the Grapevine up to, I've had baseball listeners who heard us in Eureka, so we could be talking to people all over the state right now. What if they're in a place where there isn't a project like this going right now? How hard is it for maybe one or two people to get together and really get this going in their community?
Well, California Voices, it's expanded out from the Central Valley area. We're now doing it as an after-school program in Los Angeles and Sacramento. Soon we'll be doing it in the Bay Area. And we're continually moving into more and more schools, and they can contact us via our phone or our website and find out how they can become involved.
And the website is?
That's www.cmcweb.org.
So www.cmcweb.org or 559-445-0015 if you want to find out more about that. If you're a veteran, give them a call. If you're someone who just wants to volunteer your time, give them a call. And maybe you have a teenager who you're trying to figure out something good to get them involved with. I think you have a lot of success stories like that, don't you?
Yeah, we do, and we're actually recruiting. Our goal is to have 50 young people at our orientation February 2nd to find out how they can get involved in this and other projects. And we're looking for young people. They don't have to have experience with technology, but a willingness to serve this community and volunteer 250 hours in 2008 working with people like Vic.
And what they get out of it, and this has been the most impressive thing to me about your project, not just that you're preserving history, which is what I've been trying to do for a couple of years, and partnering with you has been a great thing for me and the work that we've done on TV and trying to continue here through the radio and putting together a weekly TV program that I hope to have up and running in the near future. The most impressive thing to me is what it does for these young people. Because, yeah, they're learning how to use a computer and to edit some videos, and they probably go home and make a video of something else, too, once they figure out these skills, and then they can take all their pickup basketball highlights and put some music to it and have a nice little video. So they're getting those skills, and that's fine. But they're also learning history, and they're not just reading it out of a page of this book, although if they get stories of service that Vic Smith is in here, Valley Veterans Remember World War II, they'll get kind of the same material. But they're getting so much more than they get out of a book, because they're seeing, like we heard today, the emotion that Vic has that's still so fresh 60-something years later. And these can really be life-changing experiences for these young people, and not only educate them, prepare them for work in related fields, but I think just make them better citizens. Am I exaggerating there, or is that accurate?
No, that's definitely correct. After you work with people like Vic, you hear some of these stories. You know, spend several weeks working side by side with someone who really helped to define the world that we live in today. It's hard to walk away from that and then not become involved and want to also contribute in some way. And you know, I got to say, Paul, I'm really proud of this community that we live in, because over the last 5 years, we've had over 1,000 youth and adults come forward to work with veterans, and I think that's pretty impressive. I think we live in a pretty special place.
Well, and I think you're qualified to say that because you've been up and down the state, and you've done work in San Diego, Sacramento, all over the place. Is that more unique to the Valley, that people are this dialed into it in the quantity here in the Valley more so than those other places?
Yeah, I think especially when it comes to our veterans. I mean, we really, I think, appreciate and honor our veterans here in the Central Valley.
Well, and I guess there's other evidence of it, too. We've got Fresno has the largest Veterans Day parade west of the Mississippi. The Veterans Home is supposed to be going in, whether Trump's involved or not. We hope to see that at some point. I know Charlie Waters, our friend, is working very hard on that. The Legion of Valor and the Veterans Memorial Museum downtown is just an absolute jewel for the Valley. And they're in, even up the road at Castle, they've done a great job of preserving so much military history. So I feel the same way, that this area is unique in the way that it values its veterans, values the contributions that they've made. And that's one of the reasons that I want to stay here, and when I'm developing this TV show, I want it to go across the country, but I want it to be based here in Fresno, and so I can keep doing this show here on KMJ, too, of course. That's the big plan. We need to get our last commercial break in here. Maybe you have a question for Brandon and some of the things he said about the project. Maybe you'd like to get involved. You can call us at 490-5858 or toll-free 800-776-5858. We've got another 15 minutes or so to take your calls, and we'll get back to that small world moment that I mentioned with Vic Smith. We'll have more of Hometown Heroes next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to the program. We come down the final stretch of Hometown Heroes, the first edition of this program for 2008. We look forward to dozens more positive Sunday afternoons where we revisit the experiences of veterans here in our valley whose service and sacrifice have kept our country free. One of those is Vic Smith, and we'll continue with him now. If you have a question for Brandon Wright and the California Voices Project and how you can help preserve history in your hometown and for the veterans in your life, you can call us at 490-5858 or 800-776-5858. We'll try to get to you. And again, the phone number to contact Brandon the rest of the week is 559-445-0015. That website, cmcweb.org. My daughter would appreciate that. She's on pbskids.org all the time, so then everything else we talk about is .org at the end of it. You could be talking about a Happy Meal, and it's happymeal.org. So she'd be a big fan of cmcweb.org. Anyway, let's get back to Vic. And Vic, the first time I actually spoke to you on the phone, I had been doing my series on Channel 47 for a while, and I featured a local ace by the name of Bruce Porter, who was a real pioneer in night fighting. He was a Marine night fighter ace. He's written a great book about it called Ace that I know you have a copy of. And one of the bases that he flew out of was Okinawa. And tell us the story about how you bumped into him later and had something that really interested him.
Well, it happened that I met Bruce up at Madera at the air show, and after a discussion with him, I told him, I said, you know, I have something that you might like to see. So I went back home, picked up the picture that I had, and took it back to him, and I told him that I said. Oh, I said, he says, where'd you get this picture? I said, well, our photographer took that.
And what was it a picture of?
It was a picture of four-bladed props, and it had the numbers of the various squadrons on each blade. And he pointed to the one up in the upper right-hand corner, and he said, that was my squadron. Anyhow, Bruce turned out that he was a night fighter ace in World War II. And he lives in Fresno now. And unfortunately, I haven't talked to him for a while, but I used to call on occasion and discuss things with him. Very sharp gentleman.
And his book is excellent, too, because it's so thorough. It gives you a sense of how much these guys were pioneers, because no one had done these things that they were doing before. And there were so many guys who died just in the training and to trying to figure out what these planes could do and what they'd be capable of, and he really walks you through that from start to finish. Yeah. In a great way.
Yeah, he when he became the ace, one of the things I think that was interesting is he depended on his radar man, who was back at a base in Okinawa, to vector him in on the various bogeys, and he would knock one out of the sky, and the fellow would pick up another one and give him the mileage and the direction for him to go, and he'd go and take care of that one. But for a night fighter in those days, with radar control, that was really an accomplishment.
And that must have been a good feeling that day at the Madera Air Show.
Had
this four-bladed prop outside where you were set up on Okinawa.
Yep.
And here, and that's halfway across the world. Here you are in Madera in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley, and you guys actually had that connection.
Yeah, we made the connection. Real fine gentleman.
Let me ask you one more thing about your service, Vic, as we come into the final minutes of the program here. Every veteran that I talk to remembers when he found out about Pearl Harbor. We talked to you about when you found out about the president dying. Obviously, the most intense thing you remember is April 27th, 1945, and we discussed that at length. But do you remember when the war ended, where you were, what it meant to you, what it felt like?
Yeah, I was still on Okinawa when it ended. In fact, we weren't sure it was over even then, because we had one plane come in we used to bring the planes in various traffic patterns. And this particular night, there's supposed to be three planes to a traffic pattern, and the tower radioed and said, fourth plane in traffic pattern, please identify yourself. The fellow peeled off and dropped bombs down the runway, so we knew where he was from. But that was when we had first found out that the peace papers, the surrender was coming on.
Mm.
Then, of course, they went to into Tokyo Bay and they signed the papers. I wasn't fortunate enough to go on that trip. They took the, of course, the high-ranking gold raid, which was necessary, and took them there.
How long was it till you finally got back to the valley?
I didn't come back to the valley until the following year. It was around March of 1946. I was discharged in April, but I didn't get back into Fresno until about March.
Was that the longest boat ride you had, or the shortest?
You mean to come home?
What did it feel like?
They took us to
Norfolk, maybe?
Up in Washington. I can't think of the name of the base. But they took us in Washington, and then we came down by train from there to the various stops until we got to Shoemaker, was where I was discharged. Shoemaker, of course, is in the hills just before you get to make the drop into Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Was that a surreal feeling for you at all? Did you think at the time, oh, I never thought I'd be actually back and alive and here?
Oh, yeah. The another thing that my mother and dad came up to pick me up, and they brought along my new brother. And he was just a baby. He was 21 years older. I was 21 years older than he was, but he's been a real joy to the family, even today.
Well, that's and I've heard stories about servicemen who've come home to meet their son or daughter for the first time, but to meet your baby brother, that must have been special.
21 years younger. Yeah.
So you told him all the good stories.
Told him quite a few.
Well, Vic, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today about the time that you spent serving our country, what it meant to you, and what you think folks ought to remember about guys like you?
Well, I think that everybody should, instead of criticizing the American government, I think that they should get behind and push the... this thing about they're talking about change. We've lived under this system for a long time, and I don't know what the change could be that would make it any better.
Sounds like you were watching the debates last night.
Oh, yeah.
We won't get into that hot potato. Thankfully, we only have a minute and a half left in the show here. Brandon, was there anything that you didn't get a chance to add as far as what people can expect if they get involved with California Voices and trying to preserve this history? I know that you need 30 volunteers for the summer of service. You're trying to get people right now that want to participate, veterans, teenagers, and also adult mentors who can be kind of the intermediaries, the translators, if you will, from the greatest generation language to the latest generation language. Is that how they serve?
Yeah, well, over the next 4 or 5 months, we'll be working with quite a few veterans. Also wanted to mention not just World War II veterans, but veterans of any era.
Right.
Please give us a call and get involved. It's because of generous sponsors such as the Clovis Memorial District and Comcast, we're able to offer this program free of charge. It's only about an hour time commitment. They come out, they do an oral history, they go back home, and then the kids put it on a DVD, send a copy to the Library of Congress, and also send a copy to their homes to share with their families. And then also something we'll be doing this summer, we've been doing for several years now, is the Summer of Service. We're looking for sponsorship for that, where we'll get together 30 people and work with 10 veterans to produce short documentary films, about 5 minutes in length, that really focus on the veteran story and kind of find that defining moment, as Vic's defining moment was with his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Moments like that we can focus in on a film.
Perfect. And again, the number to get Brandon, 445-0015 in the 559 area code. We're out of time. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.